Risky Business, your weekly security briefing with Patrick Gray, sponsored by Cybertrust.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Risky Business for May 1, 2007, with thanks to our sponsor Cybertrust and hosting partner Vigabyte. Don't forget to subscribe to this weekly podcast using the links to the left of our main posts. You can use iTunes or any other podcatcher you'd like. On this week's program, we'll be catching up with Adam Poynton from assurance.com.au in Melbourne to talk about design flaws in computing protocols and standards. There's been a lot of hubbub lately about this IPv6 flaw that was discussed at the CANSEC West Conference in Canada, and we'll find out what it all means. As always, we'll check in with Carl Hanmore at AusCert, who has some somewhat depressing things to tell us about hard-coded passwords. But of course, it's time now to check in on this week's news with ZDNet Australia's Munir Kataria. Or should that be the award-winning Munir Kataria?
Hey, Patrick, how you doing?
Good, mate. Congratulations.
Oh, thanks a lot.
For listeners who may not be aware, Mr. Kataria over here, Mr. Fancy Pants, has won himself an award for Best Columnist.
Oh, dear. Yeah, that was a good night.
It was a good night. Are we still suffering a little bit?
Oh, God, yeah. It's been a pretty mad weekend.
So. No, great. Great stuff, mate. So did you win that for your Securify This blog?
That's right, yeah. It was for a lot of the stories I wrote last year. And I was up against some good people. So it was a nice award. Very, very pleased.
Now, look, this is probably the most interesting news item I've spotted in quite a while. Google.
Oh, yes.
The bad guys are using Google keyword ads to direct people to sites loaded with malware. They're actually advertising to draw people into their sites.
Well, this is amazing. I mean, you know, how long has this been going on and how many people have been affected? Do we know this?
This is the thing that stuns me is that, you know, they're saying, oh, look, we've removed some offending links, but God, you know, how many are still out there? That's what I want to know.
I don't see how they can stop it because, you know, you can discover a few and then cut them off. But if they're using, you know, an unknown vulnerability, a zero-day exploit, then they can do it again. And I don't see how Google can stop this. And we all know how many million searches, you know, Google helps with every day. I just don't see how they can buy this. This is definitely one we need to keep an eye on.
And I can't imagine the bad guys are actually paying for this. They would, of course, be using stolen credit card numbers and hijacked PayPal accounts and stuff to do this. So they're not exactly going to be too concerned over putting in low bids for keywords as well. So chances are that these ads, advertising sites loaded with malware, will be actually quite high up on the sponsored links section of a relative, you know, of a search.
That's right. I really think we need to find out how many people have been affected because this. I'm just scared to think because,
yeah.
You know.
It is a big one, and I reckon that is one we're definitely going to have to watch because, you know, where does the onus lie? Does the onus lie with Google to make sure that it's only advertising clean sites? I mean, will they build some bot that goes and scans for stuff? And, yeah, it's just going to cause headaches for them. It's going to cause headaches for its users. It's also an issue that has potential to erode people's confidence in Google, which I think is a reason that perhaps they will take this seriously.
And seeing as Google makes all of its money just from advertising, you know, and people are... It's difficult enough getting people to click on the advertising links in the first place. And this, if it puts them off, then fair enough, you can use Google for your searching. But if you're not going to click on the adverts, that's their revenue gone. So they're really, really, I'm sure they're taking this very seriously.
Well, time will tell. Just a couple of quick items here. Microsoft Business Security, ready for prime time, says the ZDNet, headline. It looks like their final version of Forefront Client Security is about to come out.
That's right. I mean, you know, their enterprise security push, they came out with OneCare, which is the consumer, which was the consumer product, which has been very successful. It'd be interesting to see if enterprises are willing to buy their security solutions from Microsoft. I know with the consumer side it's easy because, you know, people buy the actual operating system and it's just there and they just go with whatever's there. But businesses, do you think it'll be as popular with them? I'm not sure.
And in slightly related news, we've got Microsoft about to launch a security portal, more of the same sort of stuff. But it's going to be a malware protection center, and it's going to list active families and variants of malware affecting its products, which is, you know, it's a good idea.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, all of the antivirus and security companies there have been doing this for quite a while, so Microsoft's arriving on the scene. I mean, they always make a big difference whenever they do that. But then again, it comes down to, you know, you're buying products from Microsoft. Should you have to pay them more money to actually fix the holes inside them, you know, or
yeah,
at least be aware of the attacks that are out there. I, I don't see the administrators really having that much faith in this. It'll be interesting to see how this works out.
Now, our equivalent of the human headline, Bruce Schneier, made some comments the other day saying, yes, you know, well, you know, every couple of years someone says exactly the same thing, which is we shouldn't need a security industry. People should just make secure products. But, you know, that's an ideal world sort of scenario. We know that's not quite going to happen, but
how many products have we seen out there that haven't had security issues?
Oh, well, you know, Apple's are completely secure. Haven't you seen their ads? Didn't you know? They're unownable.
Oh, that's right.
You gotta watch TV more, mate. And, you know, if you miss it on TV, you can download the ads off apple.com. Yes, I am being sarcastic for listeners who might be worried that I'm an Apple fanboy. We've also...
And they obviously didn't hear last week's show.
Last week's show, yeah, we did the boot went in, didn't it? Now, we've got a little bit of interesting news here from, I think it's Trend, isn't it, who made this statement? Oh, I don't even have any in my news summary in front of me, but some vendor or other has said that web threats are to surpass email threats. The crossover is imminent, which isn't really... I mean, I don't really consider that to be a huge news item because it's fairly elementary, isn't it?
No, that's right. It was Trend Micro, yeah. I mean, you know, people visit websites and they get infected. This has been going on quite a while. It's been getting more and more popular. And as people are becoming more educated to not clicking on dodgy links or, you know, links from unknown people, then now they're just going to go to websites and get done that way. It's not a big deal. It's not a big surprise, rather.
It makes for a good press release, which is probably why we're talking about it. So we should probably just not fall in for the spin and move on.
Yep.
On a bit of local news, now it turns out it's not just Big Brother who's watching Big Brother users, it's bloody everyone, because they've had some of the most appalling... The Big Brother website here in Australia has had the most appalling web application vulnerabilities in it, hasn't it?
Oh, it's been crazy. People are paying $40, and as soon as they do that, they're getting logged into random accounts and finding other people's identities, and it's been a real mess.
Well, I think that's what you get for giving the producers of Big Brother $40. I mean, you know, I think, you know, if you're forking over $40 to watch live video cam feeds of a bunch of show ponies sitting in a distastefully decorated house in the Gold Coast, then you're probably not one of the sharpest tools in the shed in the first place, are you?
I thought it was very interesting the way Network 10 handled this as well, because the issue started happening on Sunday and they refused to talk to anyone. We tried getting in touch with them on the Monday and Tuesday and said, what's going on? And they said, we'll release a statement on Wednesday, which was, of course, Anzac Day.
Yeah, great.
So maybe they were trying to, like, hide away from, you know, the publicity, but no, they're not going to get away with it. Everyone knows about it.
Yeah. And one thing that was interesting, too, is, I mean, obviously, you know, this is a show that's really popular with the Generation Y crowd, you know, who are always, you know, they're getting more and more dexterous thumbs. Their thumbs are evolving because they're always texting people and, you know, updating their MySpace profile on their, you know, strange and mysterious handsets with their thumbs. And, of course, you know, as soon as the word got out about this, I mean, everyone, all of these forums and chat groups, and they were very pissed off little Generation Ys.
I'm not surprised at all, and I would be. I mean, you know, they've only just got their credit cards and they're putting these in to get the content that, you know, that they're paying $40. And they're being exposed in this way. It's not good.
I don't exactly know what was exposed, though. I mean, you know, it's just when I hear Big Brother, I just generally tune out. But, I don't quite know what was involved there. But, you know, it's safe to say that it's caused Network 10, you know, some significant damage to its reputation. For those of you who are regular listeners to this program, you'll understand why I introduced this next news item by saying IE also affected by US $10,000 QuickTime bug. Drink.
Yes. Oh, well, I almost forgot about that one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the vulnerability drinking game that Munir and I came up with the other day, which is every time there's a vulnerability in Oracle or Microsoft products, you have to have a swig. And it looks like, IE is affected by the bug that enabled some white hats to hack into a MacBook at a security conference and win a $10,000 prize.
That's right. Who would have thought that it actually affected Microsoft users as well? At the time, they thought it was just going to be Apple users that were infected that were using the Apple browser, but no, it happens to be Internet Explorer as well.
Yeah, well, only when the vulnerable Apple code is loaded into...
That's right,
IE. So if you're not using QuickTime, you're pretty much sorted. But I don't think it's really a huge surprise there because it is a fairly straight port, especially considering, you know, same architecture now and everything. Yep. So, I mean, even the shell code would be...
Yeah, as both of these systems are getting more and more compatible, then we're going to see more of this, I guess.
Yeah, now, here's an interesting way to get owned. Graphic designers out there, take note that there's there's actually an exploit out which takes advantage of a highly critical security flaw in Photoshop.
Yeah, I mean, this is quite different, isn't it? So you get an image that you want to manipulate. As soon as you start doing that, there's some sort of buffer overflow issue. And, you know, there's some exploit code out there that'll take advantage of you. It's
well, I guess it's one way to stop people from ripping off your logo, you know, load it up with malware.
Is that legal?
Yeah, well,
maybe it's a form of self-defense. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that would stand up in court.
You never know. but somehow I doubt it.
I think Adobe's trying to fix it, though. So, yeah, I don't think that'll be out there for too much longer.
We've got the next item, which is a bit of a drama with Facebook. Once again, sort of an application, a web application vulnerability.
Yeah, that's right. This is something strange which I came across last week, where I just signed up, peer pressure and all of that, and I clicked on a link. Somebody sent me a message, and before I knew, I was logged into her account. And it was like, how did that happen? And so obviously the first thing I did was change her status message to her name is being hacked, which is quite funny. But no, I've been trying to get hold of Facebook, and I got an email this morning from the Facebook security guys, so hopefully I'll be updating the story, because at the moment we've got no idea what happened. But
Now, Facebook's like MySpace. It's like a networking thing, right?
Yeah, it's a grown-up MySpace.
It's a grown-up really, MySpace, yeah. And you had contact with... You actually managed to take over the account of one of your friends.
And that was just purely from an email link, you know?
Yeah,
they send you a notification by email saying this person has left you a message, and click here to actually get that message. I clicked on the link and I was into her account, and it was like, this is very odd. And there's been a few security issues out there, but I'm waiting to speak to the Facebook security people and see, you know, what's going on, because I managed to recreate it using Firefox but not using IE. So I'm not sure if it's a browser issue, I'm not sure if it's their side, but there's something strange going on.
Look at this, Munir Kataria, the hacker. I love it. It's fantastic. And I guess, you know, I got to ask, I mean, while you had control over your friend's account, I believe it's one of your female friends, did you actually try to send out highly suggestive sort of friend requests to the creepiest guys you could find on Facebook?
That's why she was really lucky it was me and not you.
Oh, that would have been sweet. I'll tell you what. Okay, and Office 2003 is apparently getting a bit of extra armor. The security features that Microsoft has built into Office 2007 are due to be slapped onto 2003 the best they can do it. Now, this, of course, is probably a move in the right direction with all of the flaws we're seeing in, you know, programs like Word and PowerPoint over the last few weeks, or over the last few months even.
Do you know, Patrick, this is kind of strange. I mean, yes, obviously it's a great thing, and I'm glad that Microsoft is improving the security, but doesn't it seem strange behavior unless, you know, you want people to move up to the next version of Office, and if you're making Office 2003 more attractive, it seems like, hang on a second, I'm surprised by this, pleased as well, but surprised, because I would have thought that they'd be trying to push people into upgrading as soon as possible. And saying, well, if you want the new security features, then upgrade. But, you know, it's an interesting move, and I'm very, very pleased about it.
They always have to balance the need to introduce, you know, tighter security controls into their products with, you know, also trying to sell, I guess, their next versions based on the strength of their security, which is one of the key selling propositions for Vista. Mm-hmm. And I've had some interesting conversations with Microsoft staffers about that, particularly when they weren't allowing pirated copies of Windows to download XP Service Pack 2,
which, of course,
I was dead set against, because I said, hey, if you want to actually secure the environment for all of your paying users, you know, you're going to have to let this one slide. But I don't think they did in the end. So this does perhaps signify a bit of a shift in the way that they're doing things.
It does, and I really think, I mean, you know, it's got to affect their revenue somehow. I'm sure some people there would be encouraged, okay, let's just upgrade and get all the best security features. But, this is going to extend the life of Office 2003, I think.
Okay, Munir, well, that's all we have for this week's news. So thank you very much for coming on to the show, and congratulations again on your award. You've done very well, and you obviously deserve it, mate, so congratulations.
Thanks very much, mate.
Okay, it's time to move on now. Next up, we've got Auscert's operations manager, Carl Hanmore, on the line from Brisbane. And Carl, it looks like some more bad news in the area of hard-coded passwords.
Yep, it's fast becoming one of my personal bugbears. I'd hoped we were over this problem 20 years ago, but it would appear not. This time, not quite a password, but close enough. There's a new vulnerability listed on Nortel VPN routers, which have a hard-coded DES key in there, which is used to encrypt the passwords for all the accounts.
Hard-coded, you mean like just the one?
Yeah, like Dead Beast or something like that. I don't know exactly what the hard-coded passphrase is in there, or the actual DES key. But because it's static, obviously it means it's very easy for people to create a static reverse table. the passwords on that equipment. So,
and what are the implications for the users of that particular VPN device?
Look, if people are using that, they'll need to get their latest patches available from Nortel and just patch it up.
What's the attack? I mean, does it just mean that people can compromise accounts or they can own the box?
It means a very skilled attacker who has gained some level of access to the device already may be able to further compromise accounts on there. It's something that you'd normally get pretty excited about if it was on a multi-user interactive system. Like if this happened on a standard operating system, you'd be quite excited. Given the actual relatively small scope for attack, this is not that exciting. It's just very frustrating to see the same class of problem just still occurring.
So you reckon one day, you know, when you're in your 80s, on your rocking chair, sitting out the front of the old folks' home, you'll still be cursing these problems as they're injected into your brain via an RSS feed?
That's exactly the case. I'm damn sure of it. It's one of those things that we've not got to go away yet, and I think, you know, it's a lot to be had in the education space of new people learning to code, that these practices are fundamentally bad. Unfortunately, sometimes it's quite a hard problem to solve. You know, there's got to be that password, that credential somewhere, and I'm not sure necessarily that some manufacturing processes lend themselves to avoiding this problem, but it's something we need to tackle as an industry, that's for sure.
We've got another nasty one for small to medium enterprises using Asterisk. Now, Asterisk is a VoIP bit of software. It's a VoIP suite, or is it more voicemail and stuff like that?
Asterisk is Asterisk. Asterisk was a Gaul.
Yeah, I do apologise. Well, I suppose we could say that Asterisk are putting the risk back into Asterisk.
Hey. Nasty.
Boom tish.
Yeah, this is an open source PABX, VoIP PABX software. It's quite a tidy little package, and I know that there's a number of smaller companies around that are rolling this out, targeting, you know, the small office. Instead of putting in a conventional PABX, you can put in one of these Asterisk systems, hook it up to an online VoIP provider, and you've got your voicemail, and in this specific case, fax over IP, you know, VoIP fax, if you like.
Yeah.
And that's where the particular vulnerability comes in. It's only for people who've got that enabled.
Mm.
So, you know,
do people have to dial in to exploit that, or can they get to it from the net connection? I suppose if it's an online VoIP provider, they can probably, you know.
Yeah, it's a packet level attack.
So they should look for some patches for that one.
They should look for patches, and if they haven't done the setup themselves, if they've got a computer company to do that for them, they should just touch base with their computer company and check that that their system is not vulnerable, or have the patches applied, as the case might be.
Now, in some non-InfoSec news, we understand you're having a bit of a big day on Sunday.
Yes. The long-postponed, long-avoided and long-hidden wedding is now occurring. She's finally going to make an honest man of me.
Well, on behalf of Risky Business, mate, congratulations.
Why, thank you.
All right, Carl. Well, I guess we won't be chatting to you next week because you'll be on your honeymoon.
Yes, indeed.
So we hope you enjoy that, and we'll speak to you when you get back.
All righty.
It's now time for this week's feature. With the internet a mishmash of interconnected devices from thousands of software publishers and hardware vendors, standards have become important. Very important. But what happens when standards, or RFCs as they're known on the internet, are flawed in themselves? It's become apparent that many implementations of the IPv6 protocol are flawed, and that those flaws can be traced back to the RFC or standard itself. The type of design level flaw that we're talking about here could have massive implications for enterprise networks. IPv6 will make up the fabric of the new, improved internet we're currently using IPv4. It turns out the IPv6 RFC, as published by the IETF, or Internet Engineering Task Force, well, I'm not going to beat around the bush. From a security point of view, it is a piece of crap. The OpenBSD project's Mark Balmer says this flaw, the supersource routing flaw as it's been dubbed, is an ominous sign. I'll quote him. IPv6 routing headers are a type of supersource routing and pose a significant and serious risk to hosts and the internet. That this host-controlled routing even came into existence once again shows how broken the IETF process is. Disable this source routing with prejudice. And that was a quote from Mark Balmer of the OpenBSD project, which has, of course, patched its implementation of IPv6. Now, Adam Poynton, a consultant with assurance.com.au in Melbourne, is on the line to shed some light on this for us. Adam, we've been hearing a lot of rumblings lately about this IPv6 problem. Specifically, it was a big deal at CANSEC West at the conference in Canada there. Can you describe what the controversy is all about?
Yeah, I can. Some information was released by a researcher, as you say, at the CANSEC West conference, which basically pointed out the IPv6 feature known as the routing header, which is essentially the IPv4 source routing has made its way into version 6. And as everybody knows, the version 4 source routing was avoided at all costs. And it's in the 6 spec, and everybody supports it, as the RFC states, and there we go.
So the RFC is like the blueprint, the standard by which all vendors implementing the IPv6, of course, the upcoming next version of the internet protocol, they have to adhere to the RFC, don't they?
They don't have to. It's basically a plan or a guideline for people to follow so that they can interop with everybody else's IPv stack. Well,
interoperability is kind of important on the internet, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it is. It's definitely one of the core features.
Yeah. Putting the inter in the internet. So I guess, this raises some questions around, what the hell are we doing with standards? One of the OpenBSD guys said that this feature should be avoided at extreme costs and says that, this points to some serious problems in the way the IETF does things. I mean, would you agree with that assessment?
I'm not sure about pointing to serious ways the IETF does things incorrectly. It is definitely a feature that should be avoided and terminated, as they say, at all costs.
Yeah.
It's interesting that the vendors did implement it as the RFC states. They didn't have to, but most of them did. But in their security range of products, like the firewalls and so forth, they obviously kept security in mind and disabled the feature.
So it seems that vendors, the more security conscious ones are actually on it. But what does this sort of flaw allow an attacker to do? I mean, what are the implications of this bug that seems to have found its way into all of these IPv6 implementations?
It essentially allows a remote packet crafter or an attacker in this case to determine which route their network traffic will take. And that's obviously bad because you can bypass certain controls if they're not strict and devices do follow or honour the source routing options. So an attacker can basically determine the path their packets take to and fro, and that can also point back onto itself and create loops and all sorts of
So they can send pretty much anything they want pretty much anywhere via any route.
Pretty much, yes. It's basically the source routing option in the IPv4 specification was a similar thing. And everybody frowned upon it as soon as they saw what it would provide.
So why didn't some bright spark at the IETF actually modify the IPv6 RFC to take care of the problem? Why is the standard still, got an actual vulnerability in the standard? Why isn't it just being ripped out?
Well, I guess it's a vulnerability, but it's also kind of a feature. Sort of racking my brain thinking about where you would use it, legitimately use it, and I guess in some very proactive clusters you might use it, but anywhere else on the internet definitely won't be used.
So it's just one of those things that has no real worldly business being in the RFC in the first place. I guess that's what I'm getting to, is why on earth is it still in there?
I guess it's just brought in from IPv4, and as you know, if all the things that were tried and true were brought through. This one was definitely frowned upon in IPv4, so I'm not really sure why it's in IPv6.
And we've seen other instances where we've had protocol-level flaws. There was one that actually some Australian researchers out of AusCert discovered in 802.11.
That's correct, yeah. It was an IEEE standard that a lot of the vendors developed to, and it was a design flaw, but it was also a feature. And the feature obviously could be used for good and bad.
Mm.
But again, as you say, that was a standard that was developed to. All the vendors implemented it as they saw fit to the standard and resulted in, vulnerable hardware.
I mean, it's not just that. We've seen also Bluetooth as well has got some pretty inherent design flaws, doesn't it?
Yeah, Bluetooth does, you're right. I think the RFCs and standards are reviewed as they're being developed, but also after the fact. Like with the IPv6 RFC, another RFC came out afterwards that actually pointed out that that feature, the routing header, was a bit of an issue. But it sort of stayed in there and continued on. So you're right, many standards are developed without security in mind, more so as an afterthought. But, you know, its features can be used for good and bad, and here we go with some bad ones.
Yeah, it looks that way. And, I mean, there was that thing from, what was it, Oslo University in 2002, which revealed a whole bunch of problems with the SNMP protocol. But that was more to do with the way vendors chose to implement the standard rather than the standard itself. Isn't that right?
Correct, yeah. I remember when that came out, it, a lot of vendors were scrambling, so initially it did look like a design flaw, but information was pretty scarce at first on it, which was annoying. But once you dug into it, it was more the vendor's implementation of the spec, rather than the spec itself having features that could be abused. It was the vendor's development around that that led to the vulnerabilities.
So I guess this is a bit of a reoccurring problem, isn't it? You know, that we've got these standards which aren't really developed with security in mind, and then they sort of go out there, we find problems in them. You can't really change a standard, especially when you're trying to, you know, eliminate a feature which is used across the board because it has implications for interoperability. Do you think we're handling these challenges in the right way?
I believe so. I think the standards often create for a more stable environment. But it just means, you know, third parties and other entities connecting in, whether it's somebody, some other vendor's product or whether it's an attacker, they're forced to follow the standard. So if secure development follows the standard as well, and, you know, it's not, often not, then we should see a fairly stable, secure and interoperability environment.
So you think maybe some more effort should be put in at the protocol design phase?
Design, yeah, but... it's more about the forethought of security in design, but also all the way through to the actual delivery of the spec'd out design. So it's fine to have a real secure design, but if you coded poorly, then you've got the issues. Mm. If you've got a really poor design and it's coded really well, then you could get around the issues. But it's, you're right, it's definitely best practice to follow security all the way through, from design through to implementation and obviously after in review.
Okay, Adam Poynton, thank you very much for joining us.
No problem.
Well, that's it for another edition of Risky Business. We'll be back in next week with more InfoSec news and analysis, thanks to our sponsor, CyberTrust. Thanks for listening and tune in next week.